So I want to thank the organizers for letting me speak about something else, a bit off the main course of this workshop, but it does concern some kind of intertwined order in different system, and that's a bilayer graphene. I'm going to try and convince you that it's really a nice playground, play with various broken symmetry states, and one of the reasons that it's a nice system is not only you can control various magnetic phases by electric means, you can also measure through transport a signature of various magnetically or pseudo-magnetically ordered phases. So my collaborators on this work are Ganapati Morty and Herb Fertig. We have a long-standing collaboration funded by the Israel-US Binational Science Foundation. And we had useful discussions with a number of people, and particularly I want to mention Jun Zhu and her student Jing Li from Penn State, who gave us some told us about yet unpublished data that you know, kind of related, we think, to our theory. Okay, so so what's the system I'm going to talk about? Graphene in the quantum Hall regime, and I'm assuming that most of the audience knows about the quantum Hall effect in general. So I will not give any introduction to that, but I want to stress two things that are really unique and special to graphene as opposed to other two-dimensional electron systems. The first thing is that if you look at, this is actually one of the first data of Novoselov and Gein that shows the quantum Hall effect in graphene. And you notice there's a factor of four here, which reflects the degeneracy of discrete degrees of freedom. So in graphene, in addition to the spin, you have another isospin degree of freedom, which is the valley. And so we have a manifold of states, which is the highest symmetry it could have is SU4, but it can be broken by various things. We'll discuss it next. The other thing that is very special to graphene in a strong perpendicular field is that the Landau levels have, there's a Landau level at zero. And this is a very special state. There's a Landau level that sits exactly at zero energy in undoped samples. And whenever there is some discrete degree of freedom that splits it because of either some polarizing field or interactions, it always splits into particle and Hall symmetric states. So there is a very strong particle Hall symmetry embedded within this state. Now, if we stick for the moment to a non-interacting picture, one of the such splitting of discrete degrees of freedom happens when you have a finite sample. So imagine that there is a strip of graphene with finite boundaries. The valley degree of freedom becomes non-degenerate at the edges, and in fact, what you get is their edge states, and the energy levels, the zero Landau level splits to a particle and Hall symmetric states. So this happens if you imagine that the Zeeman splitting, which splits also the real spin, is negligible. However, when we turn on the Zeeman energy, the spin up and down states split up by, again, for the moment, I'm neglecting interaction. This is just non-interacting picture. And then the structure of edge states that you're going to get is very reminiscent of what you get in topological insulators, namely you have a helical state where a particle-like spin up crosses with hole-like spin down, and as a result, there's an already old paper by Abanin, Lee, and Levitov that predicted that you're going to get a quantum spin hole effect, or this picture at least suggests that you'll get a quantum spin hole state in graphene in the nu equals zero quantum hole state. Namely, it should be a good conductor, which is in contradiction with the experiments, but before coming to the experimental data, let me mention that, of course, this is a non-interacting picture, and we have to ask what will interactions do. So the first attempt to put in interactions, there's some work by Herb Fertig and Louis Bray and some other people who notice that if you put in the Coulomb interactions and take into account the exchange, just like our experience from other quantum Hall systems, actually Steve is one of the people who were involved in one of the first important works on the subject, there is going to be quantum Hall ferromagnetism. So the ground state will be ferromagnetic. That's the expectation. And then coming back to what will happen to these edge states, Louis Bray and Fertig suggest that instead of having a sharp edge between the spin polarized bulk and spin unpolarized edge, you're going to get a smooth domain wall of the spin configuration, which has a finite width, and as a result, instead of having just a single electron channel, which is helical, you're going to get some collective mode, and that collective mode is associated with the fact that there is once you form such a domain wall, the spin orientation in the plane perpendicular to the field can freely rotate, and there's essentially a one-dimensional mode that can be thought as some kind of a spin texture expanded over the whole edge. It's gapless, it's helical, and it can be described by a one-dimensional helical Lattinger liquid. And in fact, what's the bottom line of all I said so far is, would it have any different or qualitatively different properties than the non-interacting? The answer is no. It will still be topologically protected. It should still predict that the state will be perfect conducting. And that's in contradiction with experimental observation, which actually show that it's an insulator, it's even a strong insulator, becomes even stronger at stronger magnetic fields. And then we have to ask ourselves, what was wrong with all the picture I described before? And the answer is that we forgot, or one has to take into account that it's not just the SU2 spin system. We are starting from something that is multi-flavored, and therefore there are lots of ways in which you can break the symmetry. A ferromagnet is not necessarily the lowest energy state. So you can have a variety of symmetry broken states, and in fact, so there were several papers. I'm quoting only a very small fraction of the literature, but one in particular work that I want to mention is by Maxim Kharitonov, did a mean field calculation, which its main ingredients is that in addition to the Coulomb interaction, and which is long range and that SU4 symmetric, he puts a lattice scale interaction, a Hubbard-like. And that interaction is anisotropic because in the valley sector, it distinguishes, it knows about the structure of the orbitals. And therefore, it can assist in selecting one of the possible ground states. So according to his calculations, he predicts for monolayer graphene at least 4 distinct phases. This is a phase diagram with some interaction parameters. So one of the states is our favorite and well-known ferromagnet. But you can also have a canted antiferromagnet, which actually, in the limit where the Zeeman field is relatively small, it wants to become antiferromagnet. You can have a more exotic phase, which is called the Kekulé dimer. It's a kind of a valence bond crystal, in fact. So you have a spin singlet on 2 sublattices. And you can also have a charge density wave.
This is a charge density wave also.
This, which?
The Kirkelli. The Briggs translation.
Well, yeah. That's actually, yeah, it does, yeah. Right, but it doesn't have. So the charge density wave is such that you have you occupy only a single sublattice. Okay,
that's so more like an energy density wave, right? That's more like an energy density wave.
Though. No, if there's charge density, once you break translation symmetry, there'll be modulation of the charge density. I mean, the charge isn't concentrated at a point. There's charge on the bond. So the charge on that bond is going to be higher.
Actually,
So is that the right picture? The chart?
I'm actually not sure that that picture may be, a little misleading because.
Does this actually double the unit cell?
Right. Anyway,
An image spin system, you can have VBS order, right?
And the charge density wave response,
of course,
to that, right?
Yeah.
There's a linear coupling between charge density SI dot SJ. Yeah. So,
in fact, this is exactly the VBS state that you seem to get in frustrated magnets. Right. Okay, so that's a theoretical prediction, but there is at least one phase transition that I believe has been very nicely verified experimentally, and that's the transition. So notice that some of these lines are first order, but the transition from the canted to the ferromagnet is second order. It's just closing off the canting angle, and indeed, there is a very nice work by Andrea Young and collaborator. Andrea Young is here, actually, in Santa Barbara now. And what he's shown, this is in the when he was a postdoc at MIT, is if you look at the two-terminal conductance of graphene and apply a tilted magnetic field where you can separately tune the Zeeman energy compared to the perpendicular field, you can tune a transition from an insulator to an almost perfect conductor. And the very natural interpretation is that it's actually an indication of the transition from a canted antiferromagnet to a ferromagnet. So that's an example for something that seems to have been consistent with this picture. And in fact, the ferromagnet is indeed going to be a quantum spin Hall state. And the reason that it has a not completely perfect conductance is explained in one of our work, but that's not an important issue for the moment. Now let me go to bilayers. So what is the additional ingredient we have in bilayer graphene is that there is another discrete degree of freedom, and that's the layer index. It's not exactly a good quantum number, but there's another discrete two-level thing. And if you apply, in addition to a magnetic field, also a perpendicular electric field, you can control the polarization of the layers, and that acts like, in a sense, a Zeeman field in the layer sector. So if you're looking at the symmetries of the Hamiltonians, actually it turns out that applying a perpendicular electric field splits the valley degree of freedom by an amount that is proportional to the interlayer bias. So that's a way to control the valley sector, and therefore you can look at the phase diagram that involves two main actually there can be three, but at least two. One is the electric field, and the other is a magnetic field. And if you also have a tilt angle of the magnetic field, that's a third one that can be controlled. And these are typical examples to the phase diagrams that have been obtained experimentally. This is by Amir Jacobi, and this is by Philip Kim's group. And the main features you see here is that these are showing just, okay, this is actually a generated phase diagram. I'll get to it soon. But this is just data for conductance, where you see most of the phase diagram is insulator, except there's a very narrow line of high conductance. And this is interpreted as separation between at least two kinds of insulators. One which is concentrated near zero electric field appears to be consistent with what before I called the Kented antiferromagnet, just the same state. However, if you apply a very strong polarizing field, you favor, eventually what you favor is a layer polarized state, and that one is also an insulator. And in between, you have some phase transition, maybe domain walls or whatever, and you can have conductance. So that's the interpretation of this data. This phase diagram shows similar thing, except that the tuning field here is the total magnetic field, which controls the Zeeman energy, and therefore it can induce, in addition, a transition from a Kented antiferromagnet to a ferromagnet, just like what we had before. So these were the first observations, but things are actually more complicated. Okay, so here I'm just mentioning the nature of the various states, where layer polarized is a new state that we get here that is favored by, it's kind of a charge density that favored by a very strong polarizing electric field. But now let us notice
that's not a broken symmetry state.
What? Which one? This one?
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, because you've got an electric field that chooses the two, one layer over the other, and you've got added charge on the carbons that are above a plotted center.
Yeah, right.
So all of the symmetries are explicitly broken.
Ah, no, that's true. That's true. Yeah, okay. That's right. Actually, I should mention that when I say by layers, I'm only going to refer to the Bernalstadt ones, where there is a dimer, you know, connecting the up and down layer. Okay, I'll get to it soon, but yeah, you are right, yeah. Okay, so this, if you like, it's a trivial, this layer polarizes the most trivial state here. Okay, so now how did these guys obtain the phase diagram? All the points that you see here, I identified by some kind of conductance peak. This is once again a two-terminal conductance of the device. And whenever you see, so you see something that is mildly an insulator, but there's some peak in the conductance. And that's where they put the point to plot the phase diagram. However, if you look more closely at the raw data, you see that there's not always just one, but sometimes there are two peaks. In fact, there is a feature that is named not by me, but by Jun Zhu, as I mentioned soon, a Batman ear type feature. There are two peaks, and in fact, there's more recent data, and that actually suggests that maybe you have more than one maybe there's another phase in the intervening here by this criterion. And there's more recent data that is not yet published. I did not get permission to show you, although, you know, the audience, I think, is mostly, not only theorists, but never mind. But it's just because they, of course, they didn't write it up yet. But that's from Jun Zhu's lab. And what basically they find, in at least part of their samples, not every time, is this kind of, so this is just hand-drawn by me, okay? So what you find is, as a function of this polarizing electric field, there are the usual canted antiferromagnet and layer polarized, but in between, there appears to be a phase that is more or less metallic, and it's characterized by this Batman ears structure. So now there is another set of data I want to mention, and that's due to Andrea Young, the same guy I mentioned before. And now, in his lab in Santa Barbara, they do capacitance measurements and measure layer polarization, and they see some peak features in the capacitance, which also seem to suggest phase transitions, and that's the phase diagram that they plot for the new equal zero, where this axis, which is denoted by P, you can think of some parameterization of an electric field. So it appears that they identify, at least for high fields, some additional intermediate phase. So the moral from all I've shown you so far, there is some evidence that there might be some intermediate phase. There's not only just these two, and here I come to our theory. So I will not give a lot of details. I just want to mention what is really new or more emphasized in our work compared to many other studies. We basically start from a microscopic model. And we do hard refoc on this, but the microscopic model has two ingredients. There's a non-interacting and interacting Hamiltonian. And the non-interacting part is effectively a 2x2 model, just like in many other works. So it basically accounts for the fact that in the unit cell of the bilayer, you have four atoms, but two of them are very strongly bound by this dimer, and you can write an effective Hamiltonian for the red ones, which are on A and B on two different layers. Okay, and that's where most of the system lives. And in a strong magnetic field, you can write such a Hamiltonian, with A is the lowering Landau level. Just a standard thing. Now, I want to mention what is the secret ingredient in our theory, okay, compared to, you know, the same thing that you can find in many papers. And that's that we take into account non-perturbatively for the term that I denoted here in purple, and that is coming from a hopping term that on naively appears to be lowest order. It's a hopping term directly between the two red atoms, and it's called, it's in the literature, gamma 3, is the thing that if you look without magnetic field, it causes a trigonal warping of a quadratic band touching. So it's a trigonal warping term. And I write it in this way in order to appreciate the following fact, that although this hopping parameter appears small compared to, you know, many others, if you add this term and use a parameter, a dimensionless parameter we call lambda, you have to notice that this parameter scales like some number which is slightly larger than 1 to square root of b perp. In other words, if the perpendicular field is of order a few teslas, it's going to be of order 1. And it completely changes the structure of the wave functions in a non-trivial way, and that is tracing back to any interacting theory you do. So that is a very a crucial component of our theory. The other thing that is a bit different from Charitonov and the others that I mentioned is that in the interaction model, we have something that is a XXZ type in the valley sector. That's the same as Charitonov, but we also have a density term and an orbital, where orbital, the orbital degree of freedom is related to the two degenerate orbitals of each valley spin. Okay, or nearly degenerate orbital. So there's another, this is basically the minimal model that seems to give you most of the features that we can obtain. Okay, so results. So this is the phase diagram that we get theoretically, and there's a zoo of states. And I will not spend time talking about all of them, but I want to mention that all these states were predicted by some theory papers before us. But we do find that there's not one, but many intermediate phases that can intervene between the Cantor-Denti ferromagnet and the fully layered polarized. And all of them are kind of compromises of the polarization fields in the various sectors. The Kekulé I already mentioned is this VBS thing, is very narrow. There is a spin valley entangled, which I'll discuss soon, and there's also a trivial state that is partially orbital polarized, and that's black line is a first order, but all the others are second order. Now, what is the most interesting prediction of our model is the existence of a phase that we call broken U1 cross U1, because in all the other intermediate phases like the Kekulé, the Cantor-Denti ferromagnet, there is one U1 degree of freedom that is spontaneously broken. In this intermediate phase, there are two of them. And that suggests that there are two kinds of distinct soft modes that can appear. So I'll try to explain what it means. So actually, let me first mention what is the spin valley entangled state. You can think of it as a state where the electrons form two kinds of effective spinors, which combine the spin up and one valley with spin down of the other. Okay, and therefore it's called spin valley entangled. But there is some cutting angle within this isospin space, and there's a U1 angle phi, which is different. It can be different for the two spinors. However, the energetically it's favorable to lock them. So there's in fact only one symmetry, one U1 symmetry in this state. Now, however, if you are now making another entanglement between what I call here A and B, you get a state where there's another symmetry associated with another U1 angle, and then all together, that's what you find. There are two independent U1 angles that are on which the Hartree-Fock energy does not depend, and there are symmetries of the problem. And the states is characterized by three canting angles, psi, chi, and theta. And here we're describing some numerical data for how they behave as a function of the electric field. So, So one of the interesting features of this phase is that it can support a certain kind of charge excitations, which can contribute to conductance, and that's how it's related to the experimental data I mentioned before. So, so first, let me mention that something that I think is also well known to most people here, that in a quantum Hall system, whenever there is a topological defect, that there's a non-trivial Pontryagin number, that's associated with a charge. So in order to inject charges to the system, you must create an excitation that comes with some varies phase, some topological charge. And if you do it in the bulk, these are scarions, and they typically have a gap. They are gap excitations. However, you can also make edge excitations this is very schematically drawn for one of the cases that you had a U1 symmetry broken. So, like, for example, a tantalum if you're a magnet. So you can generate a meron close to the edge that, along with its image charge, can create a collective edge excitation that has a finite gap. And this gap, the gap of the excitation, is associated with the stiffness energy that you have to pay to generate such a texture. And this stiffness energy actually can become very small when you have some counting angle that goes to zero. Okay, so I don't have much time to explain all the details of this, but we discussed it in some earlier works. But as a result, what basically I'm saying is that you can have, although you have an insulating state and there are no topologically protected gapless edge modes, you can have edge modes that are very low in energy, and at finite temperature, they will look like they will be conductive. And as soon as you go close to a phase transition from such a phase to another, the softening of the stiffness can make such excitations favorable and contribute to the conductance. So let me summarize. Here, I'll try to convince you is that the mu equals zero quantum Hall state in Baylor-Dauphin as a rich phase diagram, it can be tuned so it's dictated by a combination of things, the interactions, electric field and magnetic field, and there was an important ingredient, that's the trigonal warping parameter, can induce all sorts of new phases that were not previously detected in the literature. And in particular, we are predicting the possibility to get a phase where two simultaneously symmetries are simultaneously broken. And we're suggesting that as a result, you can have some low energy, in this case, actually two species of low energy excitations, which are spin textures on the edge and can contribute to conduction. And that may explain this Bethe-Mingirs shape and structure. And just mention it, this is a bet. What we're basically saying is that behind the bet, when there's a strong woman, usually say behind every strong man, there's a strong woman, and that's a new one. This is, you don't know, recognize a very beautiful Israeli actress, Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman. So thank you for the attention. Thank you.
Okay, questions or comments?
Yeah. Is there any chance to observe this your edge or spin textures, or do you have contact with experimentalists in the direction?
I did this class with several experimentalists, for example, Phil Oslander from the Technion has a way of looking at magnetic, skirmion is actually using it for detecting skirmions in other systems. So there are techniques, there are other suggestions like looking at some optic experiments, but we didn't, you know. We first, I should say, although I'm saying that this prediction of ours is very suggestive as an explanation of the transport data, we still don't have a theory for it, so it's very hand-wavy at this point. So we still want to understand that.
So the first suggestion, how does it work? Because we are in a pseudo-spin state, so it's not really a common.
Yeah, but both U1 angels that we are discussing have a spin component to them. So there's some complicated, they support in both spin and valley. So in fact, there are two ways if you have some local probes, there are two ways you can detect them by both looking at magnetization and layer polarization. And that actually is what Andrea can do. You can look at relative capacitance and measure.
Yeah, but I don't think you can do it on such short scales.
He cannot do it locally. Right. But that would be a desirable probe if one can do such a thing.
I mean, there is these single electron transistors, which can measure capacitance
level.
But I don't think even that's on this sort of like scale.
But if you have a texture, I mean, these textures are usually on much larger landscape than the magnetic length or the size of the sun, or the lattice constant. So, Yeah,
that was kind of my question, like what is the size of this object and what controls this?
Good. So it's really controlled by the interaction. The stronger is the interaction. Okay, it's some combination of the interaction and the polarizing field. But it's typically for reasonable numbers that you put, it's larger than magnetic length. So. It's a many-body object.
So you cannot tune it, or you can't tune it?
You can tune it, perhaps, but yeah, you can definitely tune fields here. The interactions, maybe you can also tune by screening, but it's really not
the work. So a few years ago, various friends of mine told me confidently of two other states in bilayer graphene.
Okay.
One is quantum anomalous Hall state, and the other was pneumatic state. Have these now vanished?
Okay.
Or?
No, they did not vanish. Okay. So, first of all, the question is also whether.
So these would both be have bulk gaps.
Yeah. No, that's so right. Are they for mu equals zero or a finite filling? So that's
mu equals zero.
Mu equals zero. So even our model was a minimal model to which you can also add another interaction terms. And I will give you more things, and all of them can be rationalized.
Yeah.
But it's, now, even within our minimal model, we're not even sure that we found all the possible states, and we find that tuning them by just a bit can change the phase diagram. So the phase diagram I showed you before is typical in a sense, but you can have various times in states, and So this, so anything that you know is consistent with the symmetries can still be there.
We could. Anything else? Okay, good. Let's thank both speakers. We have again a session next this coming Thursday with Mike Mulligan and Boris Spivak. Okay, so let's thank them. Oh, wait, and Frisbee.